Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Karen Slaughter, who is out with her latest novel, The Last Widow. It's a new dip into the lives of Will Trent, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation agent, and Sarah Linton, the pediatrician and medical examiner, and they've been away for a while, so Karen, kind of bring us back into the world of Will Trent and Sarah Linton. I know you're getting new readers all the time, even though the series has been around for a while. What's got them to this point?
Well, you know, the great thing about writing a series is there's a challenge to write every book that so that it stands alone. So someone who's never read a Will or Sarah book could absolutely pick up The Last Widow. But we find them doing what most people do on a Sunday morning is, you know, Will's out cutting the grass, Sarah's talking to her mother over cooking Sunday dinner, and then they hear an explosion. And then they do what people who are in their position do. Sarah is a doctor and a medical examiner. Will is an agent with the Georgia Bureau of Investigation. So they're both in that first responder category. And they do the thing that most of us would not do is instead of running away from the horrible thing, they run toward it. And bad things happen because, of course, this is a thriller.
This whole idea of the two of them together, essentially a law enforcement, in a way, couple, first responder type couple, what kind of challenges does that provide for their relationship that allows you to explore these types of things on the pages?
Well, you know, in a very realistic way, the fact that they're in a loving relationship gives a counterbalance to the horrible things I'm writing about. You know, you can't just have unrelenting darkness. So there has to be a moment of levity and a feeling of safety. And, you know, I always think when I'm writing a book about how, especially this book, people respond when bad things happen. And, of course, since it's a thriller, something really awful happens. There's a domestic terrorist attack. And even though I wrote this book a year ago, it's something that we're seeing happening more and more. And when these types of events happen, I always think terrorists do not win because we still get up in the morning and go to work. We have dinner with our family. We go to church. We go to school. We go about our lives. And the only thing it changes is our resolve is some ways steelier than it was before because we're determined to keep going. And that's what I think about in relation to The Last Widow is, you know, I have this relationship with Will and Sarah, and there is where the hope comes from, is the fact that they're going to keep going on no matter what.
The Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta plays into this book. There's a kidnapping involving somebody that works there. And before I read your novels, I know you've touched on this before, but I really didn't know much about the CDC. I hear its name bandied about on news reports about maybe a new drug that comes out or something like that. But is that sort of the Pentagon for science down in Georgia?
You know, it's not just for Georgia. It's for the entire world. The headquarters is here because the man who really made Coca-Cola what it is today got tired of his golf caddies getting malaria, and so he donated land to what eventually became the Centers for Disease Control. And after the anthrax attacks, which happened around the 9/11 attacks, Congress was at the CDC, and they said, you know, this is a really important place. We need to invest in the Centers for Disease Control in a really meaningful way. So they're not just there with drugs. You know, when there's, for instance, we have a very dangerous polio-like disease that is occurring in America. They're tracking that. Whenever there's a food contamination, or here in Atlanta we had a Legionnaire's disease outbreak, the CDC is involved with that. But they also monitor natural disasters, terrorist attacks, basically anything that affects the health of human beings. They're there to monitor, to send resources, and to help.
And the people that work there, obviously there's a kidnapping victim in this book that worked there. Are the people that work there high-value targets for kidnappers? And, I mean, do they get security protection for that type of deal?
Well, some of them do in the upper echelon, but I think for the most part they are very much under the radar. You know, one of the things that I was surprised to learn is in situations like Katrina, there are people who are basically infectious disease experts and investigators, and they go to these places. They're dropped into the hot zone with a tent and their lab equipment, and they have to figure out, okay, is the water contaminated? What diseases are people getting? Or do we have a vaccination issue? I mean, they all figure out that thing. And this one thing that's really amazing about the CDC is they think about the worst thing that can happen in the entire world, and they prepare for it. So we have all over the country, in secret locations, these quarantine centers, and we have most of them are at major airports, and we have stockpiles of drugs. Like if there's an anthrax attack, there's going to be drugs for that. If there's a botulism attack, they're going to have the anti-venom. And there's all kinds of logistics involved that the CDC has information on a top-secret level that, as a crime writer, I thought, wow, this could be really something interesting to write about.
Something else that factors into this book is the idea of white supremacists. And I know that term white supremacy gets thrown around by a lot of people accusing politicians. People accuse Donald Trump of it. They accuse other people of being that. But I think it's something that's kind of foreign to a lot of us to actually understand it. You've obviously researched or written about it. What is it that drives white supremacy? Is it simply a mindset of as simple as I'm white and they're not? Or is there something even deeper?
You know, you need only look to Timothy McVeigh for the sort of thing that we're the dogma that we're seeing today. And he was very vocal about why he attacked the Murrah building. And what we have to remember about white supremacy is it's not a political movement. There's no gray between right and wrong. There is a definite hard line. White supremacy is wrong. White supremacist terrorists and extremists are wrong. And we as a society have to reject that. We have to reject their language. And saying it's political is sort of convenient because it gives us the opportunity to go into our separate corners. But, you know, we're all Americans. And America has become one of the greatest countries in the world because we solve problems. And that's what we need to do, is we need to look at these individuals and the groups that they're affiliated with. And we need to do what we did after 9/11, which is to say, we're not going to tolerate this. We're not going to live in a world like this, and do something about it. And whether or not people want to call that a political will or just a human nature coming out, I mean, I think that we just have to take a stand on it. And talking about individual politicians is reductive in a way. We need to say, hey, you know, monitor what these people are doing, the language they're using, and let's stop them.
I'm chatting with Karen Slaughter about her brand new novel, The Last Widow. It's available wherever your fine books are sold. You've delved into the executive producing realm of television with the development of one of your books through a Netflix series. I know Michael Conley's done this for the last few seasons with his Bosch character. What's that experience been like for you to be so heavily involved in a production of one of your books?
You know, it's been great, and it's sort of startling to think that this thing that I sat down and wrote in my pajamas in my little cabin in Blue Ridge, Georgia, is suddenly going to be on the screen and someone else is going to be writing the story. But I really trust the people involved. They're really very seasoned in what they're doing. The head writer for the show has worked on Homeland and House of Cards. Fosse Verdon, she's a really amazing writer, so I have great trust in her, and hopefully we'll see it streaming sometime next year.
And then it's got to be a little bit relieving to have it on a Netflix forum when you can actually have characters talk like they would talk without the restrictions of network television, right?
Yeah, it really is nice. I mean, we were talking, you know, as an author, you get a lot of phone calls from people saying, hey, we love your book, we want to turn it into a TV series. And normally those calls come from producers, and every single one of them said, you know, we want to make this as closely adapted to the novel as possible, and we can't do that on network television, which is a shame. You know, there's some good shows on network television, and they definitely fill a niche, but for this particular book, it needed something a bit grittier.
Getting into this industry for you, you've obviously mastered the literary industry, but do you feel like a fish out of water in how television operates, or did you have any idea what you were getting into?
Well, you know, it's fascinating to me. I came from a business background. I had my own company before I became a full-time writer. And as a writer, people don't think about this. I'm self-employed, so I run my publishing business. So just from a business standpoint, it's really fascinating the different nuts and bolts involved in actually producing a show and then getting it on streaming or on TV. It's just a totally different beast, and I love learning about new things.
Well, I would just think from a sheer financial standpoint, I mean, to create a scene in the book, it doesn't cost you anything out of pocket when you actually put your fingers on the keyboard, other than the research you've done. But to redo that on the screen, that takes a lot of dough, right?
Well, yeah, it does. It's really amazing. And there's things you don't even think about, like the fact that Happy Birthday, the song, there's been some contention about this, but for years people had to pay for the right to use Happy Birthday in a movie. Or, you know, if you film in New York, the New York City Police Department has registered and trademarked all their badges and their cars and the look of their uniforms, so you have to pay them. So it's really amazing, just the different things involved with that.
All right. Well, the series will be out next year, and we'll all be looking forward to that. This book is Netflix, or this book is, your series is on Netflix. This book, The Last Widow, is now available wherever your fine books are sold from the good folks at William Morrow. Karen, just another fantastically entertaining book. I'm so glad Will Trent and Sarah Linton are back after a hiatus. I kind of miss those guys, but thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.